Good morning. It's 7th of May. Our New Testament reading today is Acts 18 and 19. In these readings, we are with the Apostle Paul in Corinth. I'm going to read to you from Brother Harry Whittaker's book once again. I read. The reaction to the Apostles' teaching in the synagogue was drastic. They opposed themselves and blasphemed. This was too much for Paul. He could stand any amount of opposition and denunciation, but coarse blasphemy against his Lord was more than he could stomach. So, shaking his raiment in solemn disapproval, he left the synagogue, uttering weighty warnings against their spite and unbelief. How could any man say Jesus is anathema and not store up judgment for himself? But Paul did not shake the dust off his feet, as Jesus had commanded in Matthew chapter 10, because at this time he had no intention of giving up Corinth as hopeless. Your blood be upon your own heads. I am clean. From henceforth I will go unto the Gentiles. But that was to the Gentiles in Corinth. When he uttered these ominous words, did he have in mind the grim retribution David brought on the Amalekite for turning against the Lord's anointed? Or was it God's grim message through Ezekiel, "Whosoever heareth the sound of the trumpet and taketh not warning, his blood shall be upon him"? That's from Ezekiel 33, verse 4. The Jewish opposition now aroused must have been intensely rancorous and full of threat against Paul's life, for this situation turned into one of the very few occasions, perhaps the only one, when persecution filled Paul with fear. So much so that it needed a special manifestation of the Lord himself to rally his failing spirit. Be not afraid, but speak, and hold not thy peace. The emphasis of that shows how near the apostle had come to crumpling up completely. It was not only Jewish hostility which brought him to this pass. I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling, as he wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. That word weakness normally describes sickness. Much trembling surely identifies the apostle's illness as being malaria or something similar. In these circumstances, it is easy to understand that in face of persecution, Paul was reduced to fearfulness. To a man in low physical condition, even molehills become mountains. So, helped by the exhortation of his Lord, and by the encouragement of his fellow workers, Paul started afresh. Adjoining the synagogue was the commodious house of a proselyte of the gate, called Justus. He was one of Paul's chief supporters, and readily put his home at the apostle's service as a lecture room. Paul was now able to continue living with Aquila and Priscilla, and to make his challenge to Judaism by preaching Christ almost within earshot of the synagogue's congregation. A policy as tactless and militant as this appears to need some explaining. Surely by such a confrontation he was asking for trouble. That Paul, normally so careful of people's feelings for the gospel's sake, should swing to such an extreme of provocation can only be taken as a measure of how intensely his spirit had been stirred by the crudity of Jewish blasphemy. There came encouragement for Paul with the conversion of Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, and because of the special significance of such an unexpected gospel success, Paul broke his usual rule and himself officiated at Crispus' baptism. Along with Crispus, there was also the baptism of one Gaius, who was evidently a prominent and wealthy man. These noteworthy converts, no doubt, lifted Paul's spirit and confirmed him in the work he was doing. Thank you for listening.